Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. It's May 16th, 2017. I hope everybody's ready for summer. It continues to be beautiful here in Madeira Beach, Florida. No rain, just a lot of sun, a few clouds. Just a beautiful time out there. It really is. I saw this story, and it's kind of almost unbelievable. This is, doesn't have anything to quite to do with politics yet. It seems that the next Pirates of the Caribbean film is being held for ransom. Somebody somehow got into whatever production company. I know it's Jerry Bruckheimer that's behind these films, but I forget what is it. Warner Brothers? Is it Paramount? Is it Sony? Is it Universal? I off the top of my head, I can't tell you. But somehow the film has been stolen. I'm going to guess digitally. Somebody somehow hacked into their servers somehow, and we know hacking's going on. Of course, this WannaCry thing from this previous weekend, and we know that Sony Pictures was hacked a few years ago after they released that movie, The Interpreter, whatever that movie was about, Kim Jong-un, and we're actually going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show. And so some group is now holding the film for ransom, saying if they don't get paid a certain amount of money, they're just going to release it onto the internet days and weeks. I don't even know when this movie is supposed to come out. Days and weeks before it's supposed to be in the theaters, and of course that would hurt probably, maybe, the box office for the movie. Now, what's so funny about this? I wrote a screenplay about this very phenomenon about 14 years ago when I lived in Las Vegas. And my friends and I converted that screenplay into a very poor, independent movie. I have no problem telling you that it was very poor. Loved doing it, loved the people that I worked with and people who are still friends of mine and everything, but it's not very good, and probably is one of the reasons that I don't do movies anymore. Just to be honest with you. Hey, if I'm going to talk about something, I have to be honest about it. So in any case, I wrote a movie about an independent filmmaker who had an idea stolen. And his idea, he pitched it to a Hollywood executive. The Hollywood executive said he didn't like it, but then goes and makes that story and turns it into a movie anyway. And the independent filmmaker, along with some of his local actors that have worked in other things that he's done, get together to pull off a heist where they steal the print of the movie that is going to be showing at its premiere weeks before, and they're going to be able to convert it. And his idea is to convert it into a digital file and stream it on the internet. And once again, he's going to hold the production company ransom because it was originally his idea. Now, that was back in the days, back whenever, where I think most of these days that most films in theaters are digitally projected, right? I don't even know that. It's been a while since I've been to the movie theater, just to be honest with you. So do canisters of films still show up at theaters anymore? I have no idea. But back when I wrote this film, wrote the screenplay back in like 2003, that was still happening, even though the digital conversion had begun. So he and his actors steal this print, and they have the technology that they're going to turn it into a digital file and stream it on the internet. Way back then, I mean, even before YouTube existed. And so it's a caper film, and it's a little bit of a comedy. It's not a very good, like I said, it's not a very good movie. But so when I read that this film was being held for ransom, I couldn't help but think, man, 14 years ago I wrote about that. Man, I am ahead of my time. it feels good to see that you could predict something like that. And that's true. It's true. You can. I'm not even going to say the name of the movie. I made it so horrible. But I did it. It's out there. You can find it on IMDb.com, unfortunately. So you might want to look into that. Maybe you see the story about the Pirates of the Caribbean, and you should know that, your host, Ed Densel, wrote a screenplay and did a movie about that. We did it in 2004, and we released it in 2005, but I wrote the screenplay in like 2003, something like that, if not before then. And it kind of just sat around for a while. So there you go. Let's move on to the politics. There's this story out there, and I don't know what to make of this. I have to admit, I don't know what to make of this. There is this DNC staffer, Seth Rich, who was murdered last year. Gunned down in the street, had gone out with friends, and was on his way home, walking home. It was like 4 in the morning. It wasn't like 10 at night, but it was like 4 in the morning, something like that. And he wasn't too far away from wherever he lived in the Washington, D.C. area. And there is video of this, although it's not that clear, of two figures come up behind him and just blatantly shoot him in the back and in the head. So he doesn't even turn around. They just come up behind him, shoot him. He falls to the ground and they take off. Was not robbed. Everything that he had on him, nothing was stolen. Wallet, keys, money, credit cards, phone, everything. Not one thing was stolen. And it's still an unsolved murder to this day. And as you know, being that I also do a program about disappearances, I know a little bit. I can't help but know a little bit about unsolved murders as well. And a lot of rumors at the time, a lot of the conservative kooks out there saying, well, this is one more person maybe that the Clintons knocked off. Who knows? And we know that Washington, D.C. is a, you know, our cities, the murder rate has been up the last couple years. So there's that. But now comes the story, if you want to believe it, that in the investigation into Seth Rich and what might have happened to him, what the motive could be, they did take a look at his computers, and what they discovered, allegedly, I'm going to keep saying that, is that he had been leaking information that he had been getting from the DNC to WikiLeaks. He had been sending them... He had been sending this guy, who's also dead, a British reporter who died of natural causes. He died of lung cancer. He was in his 70s. But then that was the connection to WikiLeaks. So it went from Seth Rich to this guy to WikiLeaks, allegedly. And the family of Seth Rich had hired a private investigator. His name is Rod Wheeler to look into this. And he is now saying that, yes, that this is true. He has discovered that this is true, that Seth Rich had been leaking this stuff to WikiLeaks eventually. It was getting there. And that also there is somebody in the FBI, and the reason they got involved is because Seth Rich had a prominent position in the DNC, that they got involved, that this FBI person, unnamed, has also backed up this claim that there were all sorts of email transfers between Seth Rich's computer and WikiLeaks. All right. Now, of course, a lot of people are going to make the jump that his murder, Seth Rich's murder, had something to do with WikiLeaks. And a couple different possibilities. Either somebody in the Democrat Party found out that he was doing this and was all ticked off and decided to take care of him for doing this, or this was right before WikiLeaks released a bunch of information and maybe they didn't want their source compromised when all this happened. So Julian Assange got somebody to murder Seth Rich, and And there's all sorts of permutations of all these conspiracy theories out there. Now, it should be known that you're not going to find that. I saw this story at Fox News and a couple other places. You're not going to find this new information about this stuff being on his computer anywhere on CNN or MSNBC or anything else. You can go Google it. As I'm doing this story, I just did that. They're not talking about this part of it at all. They did talk about Seth Rich. You're going to find stories about Seth Rich being murdered from last year. But none of them are covering this new angle that Seth Rich might have been a person who was leaking information to WikiLeaks. And I think that this is something that's going to continue to be investigated. Now, you should know, even though the family hired Rob Wheeler to try to help in the investigation because maybe they weren't too happy on what the police were doing. That happens. That happens a lot in unsolved murder cases. That happens a lot in disappearances, and I'll talk about private investigators in a moment. The family is denying what their own private investigator is saying. They're saying that there is no evidence or anything else that Seth Rich, their son, whoever, their relative, had anything to do with WikiLeaks. So they are totally contradicting the private investigator that they hired themselves. That's kind of weird. That's kind of weird. So that has to be taken into account regarding all of this as well. So what do I think? As a guy who's looked at who's in politics, is a conservative, knows a lot about WikiLeaks, thinks he knows a lot about Democrats, but he also has a foot in true crime, does another show, Disappearances, which a lot of them, I believe, are murders. You know, what do I think? I don't think that you're going to be able to hear somebody more educated than myself on both. I have serious doubts whether this is connected to anything to WikiLeaks. Now, you have to keep in mind, somebody is leaking stuff to WikiLeaks. All right? Somebody, all the information that it has collected over the years, somebody in different groups, different countries, different organizations, different governments is doing this. Do I think that it's possible that Seth Rich could have been one of these people? Yes. Just like it could be possible that anybody, anywhere, is leaking information. So I will have to continue to monitor the situation, whether I want to believe if Seth Rich was connected to WikiLeaks or not. Is it possible? Of course it is. That doesn't mean it's true, but it is possible. Anybody who has a computer could be connected to WikiLeaks. However, what I think I know about the crime and when it happened, how it happened, this seems to me just to be some random murder done for a thrill for a couple different reasons. First of all, there are two people in the video, allegedly, in the video, I don't know if has been seen by the public. I don't know if it... To my knowledge, nobody, a regular citizen, has seen it. There are two people who come up behind Seth Rich, not one. It seems weird to me that if WikiLeaks was going to get somebody to murder Seth Rich, for example, or the Democrat Party or the DNC or somebody wanted to have Seth Rich murdered, that they'd get two people to go and do that. That just does not seem possible to me at all. If there was some sort of murder for hire, I think it would just be one person who would have done it. Second of all, if it was a murder for hire, then I think that whoever would do this would know we can't make this look like a regular assassination. We have to make this look like a robbery or something. So if it was a murder for hire, the assassin would shoot Seth Rich and then take his wallet, take his phone or whatever else, probably not do anything with any of that, go down the street, throw it into the sewer, you know, and make it look like a robbery when really it was a murder due to something that Seth Rich did. That didn't happen either. Just a couple people, probably two guys, coming up behind Seth Rich, shooting him and running off. Furthermore, it sounds to me like, you know, Seth Rich being out at that time of night was fairly rare for him. And it would just seem to me a little too coincident, you know, too, like, the assassin's really going to wait around. It just happens to be the killer happens to catch Seth Rich on a deserted street at 4 a.m. where this murder can be pulled off with nobody else seeing except this camera. That also, there's just something that doesn't feel right to me there either. Instead, I'm going to happen to believe there are a couple guys out there doing who knows what, 4 in the morning. They see a guy walking on the street by himself on the phone, not paying attention, because he was on the phone as he was walking home talking to his wife. And he even says that he heard some voices behind him before he hung up. You know, I just once that even on top of it adds to the fact that it just doesn't feel to me like this was a murder for hire. Now, you should know that there was a murder here in Florida. What was it? 2014, July 2014, where a lawyer, Dan Markell, was shot. He was shot in his garage as he came home from dropping his kids off somewhere. And the killer was waiting in his front yard. Yes, in broad daylight in Tallahassee, Florida. Dan pulled in, said he was on his phone, says he saw somebody in his yard, pulls into the driveway, pulls into the garage. The person follows him into the garage and shoots him through the driver's side window of his car, and Dan eventually died. In that case, it was finally solved that his ex-wife's family, specifically her brother, his ex-wife's brother, put this guy and another guy up to it. And it had to do with child custody. And what the sister to this day claims she had no knowledge that her brother and whether the rest of her family was involved in this. I don't know whether to believe her or not, frankly. But those were different circumstances. Guys following Dan around, it was a crime of opportunity in broad daylight, everything. This murder of Seth Rich doesn't feel like that, even though they have some similar qualities. And so I'm going to stick by that until I determine that I should change my mind, and I may not. So for all of you who want to jump on, you know, that whole list that's out there, all those people who knew the Clintons that died. Well, the Clintons know a lot of people. It's the law of averages. If you don't know a lot of people, then you're probably not going to know a lot of people who died by murder or a car wreck or something like that. Whereas if you know a lot of people, you know what? People die. People are being murdered and dying in car crashes and committing suicide and having heart attacks every day. And the more people you know, the more people the more often you're going to have that in your life. And that's how I've always looked at the Clinton list. Always. So in this case, I'm going to continue to look at Seth Rich, I think, that was murdered by just a couple of street thugs. I don't even know what their race is, their ethnicity. I don't care. It just seems to me that this was some sort of kill for thrill thing at 4 in the morning. And, you know, it could have been some sort of gang initiation. Who knows? Because that happens too. One more reason, all of you should be carrying guns and keeping your heads on swivels. But if I change my mind, I'll let you know. Let's move on to something else. Trump and the Russians. This is, It just gets more and more interesting with this guy and the Russians. Between him praising Vladimir Putin and his Secretary of State, now we're finding out that he released this information. He told the Russians about some classified information that Trump knew. Now, we need to state this beforehand. Trump is allowed, as President of the United States, is allowed to reveal information to other countries. And in fact, what he did, whatever he said to the Russians, as has been stated a couple different places on the right and the left, that if anybody else in the federal government were to have done that, they would be in big trouble. But being that the president determines foreign policy, he is allowed to do that. Now, Congress may take a look at that and determine if it's somewhat questionable, if not treasonous. But technically, there is nothing against Trump doing what he did. I don't think I would have done it as president, but he is allowed to do it. This is very much, I feel like the executive order regarding the travel ban. Bad idea, but constitutional. Not everything that is constitutional is smart. We have to remember that. That's why we can't say what's constitutional and what's constitutional. Well, we can do a lot of things under the Constitution as well. You have to be a little bit discriminating and discerning. So there's that. The problem, and this is what makes Trump so fun to cover, is that he does this. He gets a lot of criticism for it. All of his people, H.R. McMaster, Seth Spicer, the rest of them, all come out and say that what he did, well, he didn't reveal any sources, which is the big deal about this. And yes, we know that it was intelligence that was gathered by one of our allies, and Trump shouldn't, maybe he shouldn't have done that, but it's perfectly under his rights to do that. But then, kind of defending him or saying that that's not what happened or non-denial denials. And then Trump comes out this morning on Twitter and says, hey, I did it. I ordered the code red. And here's why I did it. He's no different than Colonel Jessup in A Few Good Men. Here he, just like in that movie, he has Kevin Bacon, although Kevin Bacon is in his defense attorney, but Kevin Bacon's character is the prosecutor, and he's the one that calls Colonel Jessup to the stand in that case that's covered in that movie. That is the whole plot of that movie. Kevin Bacon's saying one thing, but then eventually Colonel Jessup says something different. Well, Colonel Jessup is Donald Trump is Colonel Jessup, and all of Trump's lackeys is press secretary, his national security advisor, whoever else, are a bunch of Kevin Bacons. They're going out there saying, no, he didn't do this. Say, oh, no, he did nothing wrong. He didn't do that. And then Trump comes out and says, oh yes, I did. And this is the reason that I did it. That's what makes all of this so funny. And as I told my buddy Dave, I think, yesterday, that this can't go on forever. I don't know what that means exactly. I don't know if it means that Trump is impeached or Trump resigns or the Senate and the House just stop listening to him anymore, I'm not sure where this is going to go, but it can't continue forever. Because it's obvious to me, outside of the politics, totally outside of the politics, is that Donald Trump is not a person whose behavior breeds loyalty. Except amongst his family, amongst his daughter, his son-in-law, those people. Other than that, it seems that he undermines everybody else in his orbit. Which means, you know, they're eventually going to undermine. They're going to try to do the best they can do for him in their positions. But eventually, if he does something, they defend him, and then he says, "Oh no, I did that." It's gonna be Looney Tunes. To quote that actor, what was it? Was it Gung Ho? That he goes, "This is just Looney Tunes," something like that. Getty Watanabe, is that his name? He was Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles, that actor. There was that movie Gung Ho with Michael Keaton. It's Looney Tunes, that guy. And that's kind of what I think of this White House. It's like Looney Tunes. It's like Saturday morning cartoons. It's, you know, Wile E. Coyote, you know, stepping off the ledge of the cliff. You know, it's you know, TNT being stuffed down people's pants and blowing up, you know, and them all being black, walking away. You know, it's stuff like that. It's Roadrunner and Coyote. It's Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. It's Looney Tunes. And whereas, you know, the Barack Obama White House was more like, you know, this very, very dark story, you know, kind of like, you know, alternative music circa 1993. Everything, you know, I think of like maybe Alice in Chains' Dirt album. Not one positive song. Don't get me wrong. I like that album. Not one positive song on that disc at all. Great music, but not one positive song on it. That's the way I kind of think of like the Obama White House. Just dark, and that's the way as a conservative I saw it. But now I see the Donald Trump White House as like a big cartoon. It's Saturday morning cartoons. It's wild and wacky and contradictions and things that aren't supposed to happen and contradicting the laws of physics and politics. And but this has been said by other people even before Donald Trump became president, is he is the type of guy who sells people out. He just does. And this is why I think eventually this is, you know, I was talking about leaks about James Comey. Was that last week or yesterday? The days all just run together. About why James Comey might have been fired, all the possibilities, a whole wide array of possibilities. And if the issue Donald Trump has had with James Comey is that he couldn't figure out who was, you know, James Comey couldn't find out who was leaking all of this stuff from the Trump administration. I made the point at the time that everything I'm reading, it's Trump's own people who are leaking all this stuff. Well, this kind of behavior with him going out and tweeting stuff, contradicting his subordinates and people that he's picked, that means the leaking is only going to get worse, not better. Now, I don't know if he cares about that. I don't know if he understands that. I don't think, and this is why I couldn't vote for the guy, I don't think that he can think of anything outside of protecting his own ego, his own stature, anything. And that's why I believe, no matter what he was saying about the wall and everything else, that I thought that he was going to be a bad president. As I said well before the election happened, I see that Donald Trump and Barack Obama are cut out of the same cloth. They just go about it very differently. Very different social type of people, but both as egotistical and as arrogant as the day is long. Donald Trump displays it by the selling out of his own people. Now, Barack Obama never did that to Valerie Jarrett or any of his people. Never did that. Instead, what he did was he would sell out other Democrats. Not wanting, you know, campaign for him. He had all this extra money left over. His campaign didn't want to give it to any of them. They asked him for help, and he goes, "All the help you need is me," but he didn't really do anything for them. They're telling him that they're worried about re-election and keeping the House or keeping the Senate. He didn't give a dang. that was the way he expressed it, his own arrogance and, you know, being an egotistical SOB. And so that kind of personality can be displayed in different kinds of ways. I think the main difference probably politically between the two is that Obama was certainly more of an ideologue, wasn't afraid to talk about Donald Trump. I think he and Barack Obama share a lot of the same ideas regarding politics, but Donald Trump, in kind of a couple ways, I don't know if he covers it up, but he only uses it when it's convenient. So, but I see them as being two of the same person. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. So getting back to this, Trump talks to the Russians and tells them, I guess the information had to deal with bombs and laptops or something, you know, like that, which I think eventually I'm wondering if by the time I go back to Pennsylvania, I'm planning to go back to see my parents the end of July. I'm going to drive this time. I'm wondering if by that time, the end of July, if I would have chosen to fly, whether I would have been able to even take my laptop on board or, you know, carry it in a bag on the flight, or would I have to put it in the, what do you call it, the tagged luggage that actually goes down where all the luggage goes. That's going to be very interesting to me because I keep hearing, I run into it once in a while here and there, maybe once a week, about how these rules regarding electronic devices on planes is going to be changing. You know, eventually, it's going to get to the point where we're all going to have to fly naked. And everything that we're going to want to send to our destination, whether we're going on a business trip, going on vacation, moving, we're all going to have to send it by like horseback or something. I mean, that is where we are going with this. I have to tell you, I think that we have gotten too crazy about all this. I have to say, I don't like planes blowing up. I don't want to be on a plane that blows up. But I also know that, life happens. And I'm not sure that the TSA has caught anybody. I don't know if this no-fly list has worked. I don't know if any of it's worked. Any of it. So, I don't know. But if it gets to that point, government rules are killing airline travel. You know, you see these fights. There was one on a United flight, and there was JetBlue and Southwest. And maybe it's just, you know, the media hyping stuff. And I'm always open to that. But air travel used to be something that I think people enjoyed. And you go back to like the night, and I'm not saying we should go back to the regulated days, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the deregulation of the airline surely made it cheaper for everybody to fly. More people flying than ever, but I think that it's more of a pain in the butt than ever as well. And not because of the airlines, it's because of government, it's because of airports being run by government, in all of these rules, and you know, you can't take liquids on the plane. It's just crazy. And so getting back to what Trump told these guys, and now the Russians are saying, well, he didn't tell anything we didn't know us anything we didn't know already. Probably. I probably believe that statement. It's not like the Russians don't have their own spy agencies, right? So, it's easy to see how air travel has gotten worse, all in the name of safety. And see, this is, to draw a real good, I think, analogy, is to look at, you know, what is going on with healthcare. We're trying to mandate that everybody has health coverage and everybody gets this, everybody gets that. This is no different than what the government has been doing, mandating airlines to do this and to do that. It's made everything worse. It makes people want to fly less. Instead of being able to go across the country in 4.5 hours, now people maybe want to think, maybe we should just drive, even though it's going to be a lot more expensive. But, you know, we can't take this and we can't take that. And who knows, maybe some police will come on and pull us off the plane. Who knows what's going to happen? And it has, and the thoughts that go through people's heads have nothing to do with terrorists, have nothing to do with the jets being hijacked or flown into buildings or being used as bombs and people sneaking nitroglycerin on and lighting something up. And it has nothing to do with that. People's thoughts go directly to all the hassles that you have to go through to fly now. And how hard it is for airlines, and part of the reason is because all these regulations and rules, it's hard for airlines to make a buck. So the next time you're sitting in that coach seat and, you know, you're boxed up against the window and you're starting to, you know, feel like a cow, you know, being herded, you know, like cattle. The airlines, I don't believe, want to treat their customers that way. But that's the only way they can do it to make even a buck. So, I don't know. I don't know. That's why I'm not the biggest. I love the airport. I love being at the airport, sitting there watching people. I love watching jets fly. I take an interest in plane crashes, all of that. But gosh darn it, I hate flying. I hate the process of getting on the plane, sitting there. Now, you know, go see my parents, it's like a 2.5 hour flight. Sitting there for 2.5 hours. And feeling, knowing that I am surrounded by government. I'm on a private plane by Southwest, but really I'm in one of the most controlled, government-infested environments in the world. And it sucks. It sucks. And that's why I say, if I were to ever hit Powerball, and Powerball is up over 200 million now, if I was hit Powerball, you'd never see me on a commercial flight again, ever. I'd be flying, I don't know how much I would be flying. I'm not saying I don't know, but it would be private jets everywhere. Everywhere. Even by myself if I have to. I don't care about that. Because of that. So, but Trump, getting back to the main point, this kind of stuff, whether you think it's a big deal or no deal, I'm just going to try to tell you that this kind of stuff can't go on forever. Just can't. Let's move on to something else. Speaking of hacking, and this goes back to what happened this last weekend with this WannaCry virus, whatever they're calling ransomware, that infected a lot of computers. Not many in the United States, but it seems like mainly Asia and Europe were hit the hardest. There is a belief out there that this was done by the North Koreans, and I'm going to continue to have my doubts. And the reason that many of these computer security experts are saying it's the North Koreans is because the North Koreans were viewed as the country or people behind the Sony hack from 2014. You know, I told you I was going to talk about this. From that movie that made fun of Kim Jong-un, North Korea found out about it, wanted to take it out on Sony, which is a Japanese company, and North Korea hates Japan, so they got in there and did what they did, revealing all these, you know, getting their hands on emails and salacious information. Remember when that all happened? With some executives making fun of some actors and all that. There were some awkward things there. Well, the group, the reason I have a suspicion that it's not the North Koreans is simply because the name of this group, I guess it's self-titled. I don't know if there was some name written into the code or, you know, how this all happened to come about. But the group that is allegedly behind, going back several years, the Sony break-in, and then last year the Bangladesh banks, there were some hackers went in and stole $81 million from a Bangladesh bank. The name of the group is the Lazarus Group. Now, if you don't know Lazarus, if you're not into that, Lazarus is a name that is mentioned in the Bible. Lazarus was the guy that I believe Jesus caused to come back to life. And in fact, even in Western culture, there is the word Lazarus, you know, is used in that frame of somebody who has died and the doctors bring he or she back from the dead. Being that Lazarus is a biblical reference, do you really think that the North Koreans would name their group, or they would come up a name for whatever they're doing, and they would take it from a biblical reference? Now, keep in mind, now I know you may say, well, you could be, tricky for people to throw people off the trail. They're going to do it because people wouldn't think they would do it. I don't think the North Koreans are that smart. Second of all, I don't think they think that way. Remember what happened to that American? We just did that story at the end of last week about the American who left the Bible underneath the trash can in that North Korean nightclub. North Korean nightclub is still a bunch of words I never thought I'd put together. But remember what happened to him. They found it. They were able to trace the Bible to him. And he was holed up in North Korea for a few years simply because of the Bible. He wasn't even talking to anybody about Christianity there. So believing that a bunch of North Koreans would sit around and say, all right, we're going to start this hacking group. And we're going to name it the Lazarus Group. That would be a recognition that the Bible even exists. Now, I know maybe Kim Jong-un wants this done. He doesn't want it done that bad to the point where they're going to name the group after a biblical person. You know, a person in the Bible who plays a prominent part in the Bible in that Jesus, you know, has these special powers, if you want to call them, to bring Lazarus back to life. You know, if it was called the Christopher Group or the John Group or the Luke Group, even though those are names that are in the Bible as well, you might understand because those are still common names. Lazarus is not a common everyday name anymore anywhere, I don't think. Not in Italy, not in Greece, not in the United States, anywhere. So whoever would name the group would know that they are picking a name from the Bible. And I just don't think that Kim Jong-un, who would surely know about this hacking, would go along with that and say, no, 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 guys. We know that Bible thing's out there. You know, no. We're not doing that. You're going to have to name it something else. You're going to have to name this hacking group something else because all that Bible stuff, it's just fake. It's just fake news. I know that's a little convoluted, but I think it makes a lot of sense that this is why I doubt that the Lazarus Group is a bunch of North Koreans. And in fact, could somebody be setting the North Korean government up as the fallout? Hackers can do basically anything that they want. They can appear to be several different places at one time. They can fake IP addresses. And it very well may be that they saw the Sony thing as an opportunity to blame something on Sony. What better country to blame this on than a country that is so private, so protected, so wacky than the North Koreans? Because you know what? Nobody believes any news that comes out of North Korea anyway. So even if they come out and deny that they did it, nobody's going to believe them. And so these hackers could use North Korea as a cover. Meanwhile, North Korea goes along with it, knowing they don't have anything to do with it, simply because it makes them look powerful. And there's nothing more important to Kim Jong-un than looking powerful. And see what we can do with our computers? Yeah, we're using computers from 1985, but look what we can do with them. We can bring down Sony with just a couple clicks of a mouse. See, that makes what I just explained, that makes a lot more sense to me than a bunch of North Koreans getting together, going to call themselves the Lazarus Group after a biblical character, and then hack these places when we know that North Korea is not the most sophisticated place in the world. We know that. We've enough documentaries. Like I said just yesterday or last week, after 7 years, they still haven't figured out how to put a nuclear bomb on top of a missile and make it work. You know, we as the United States have been doing it from the 1950s. But somehow they've been able to stay under the radar and not get caught and hack into Sony and do this and do that and all the sophisticated stuff. There's just something about it to me that doesn't sink. All right, it just doesn't. And I'm going to continue to be doubtful about this. Now, there's another part to this, and it has to do with the software itself, as I mentioned yesterday, that the belief out there is that this ransomware that was used this past weekend is actually a descendant of something that the NSA had that was stolen. Now, there is a New York Times article, if you want to believe it, that is saying that the NSA believes that there is still somebody, a mole within the NSA, that gave this. It wasn't necessarily stolen, but that it might have been, this software might have been given away. You know, stolen would mean, to me, is more like somebody breaking in who doesn't work for the NSA, somehow gets into their computers and takes the information, takes the software. Whereas it being given away is somebody who works at the NSA, has an opportunity to make a buck doing it, or is just motivated for whichever country he or she or group they're working for. Maybe it doesn't even have to be a country. It could just be a group of hackers. Feel loyal to these people. And gives it away for payment or just to say, look how cool I am. There's a difference. And the attitude, the feeling that I got from the New York Times is the NSA continues to believe that whoever let this information, the software get out, could still be working for the NSA. Which is kind of scary. So, who would do this? How would this all happen? You know, I have to even say that I don't even think that the Chinese would be behind something like this. That I just don't think that the Chinese government would want to be involved in something. And the Chinese government knows everything about its people. Would want to be involved in something that where the finger could be pointed at North Korea. I can't see that. You know, they're kind of friends. We know the relationship between them. I just can't see a bunch of Chinese hackers getting together and doing this. I guess I'm going to come back to what I really think about all this. I continue to believe this is the Russians. This feels to me like something that's Russian, not saying the Russian government has anything to do with it, but Russian slash Eastern European people doing this. That's why, you know, when I hear Lazarus Group, that's what I think of. And there's this other group that, once again, I don't know how they were named. The Shadow Brokers. Now, I realize a lot of North Koreans know English for whatever reason or another. But would they know English well enough to be able to put together a name like that? I don't know. Would they know enough about the world to know that when you put shadow with the word shadow with the word broker together, that it kind of sounds mysterious? I don't know. But I do think that somebody who is in Russia or in Eastern Europe who knows a lot more about the world in the English language would know that you put those two words together and it kind of sounds cool. These are all telltale signs to me that this isn't North Korea, but somebody's trying to make it look like it was North Korea. And North Korea is not going to deny it because they don't think anybody's going to do anything about it anyway. And also, it makes them look strong. That's what I believe. But I'll continue to read it. And, you know, this group has been going on for a while, about 10 years. You would have thought that they would have been caught by now, just like Guccifer and some of these other hackers have been caught. It seems these guys, and girls, could be women too, a little too tricky so far. It will be interesting. If I live to be 80 years old, I think they eventually will be found out, and I'll be interested to see who they are. Just have to see. One more thing before I go. Got to talk about this. And yes, I did see that Miss USA backtracked on her comments about healthcare being a privilege. Hate to see that. But where I want to go is, have you heard of Alexander Kolpakov? Speaking of Russians. I've never heard of him before, but he was a prominent male feminist on YouTube. Would go on there and talk about how feminism is so great. He made a lot of comments regarding Gamergate and saying how all gamers, you know, hate women and obviously a liberal, obviously a kook. And he did this show. I'm not sure what the show is called, but he did the show with a woman. Her name was Heather Annable, Annable. Well, he murdered somebody. Went off and shot somebody, murdered the person. And who did he murder? He murdered his co-host. He murdered Heather Annable. Annable. Not sure what the motive was yet or anything, but, you know, nothing says feminist like murdering a woman, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's terrible. I feel bad for Heather's family. It's horrible, but I'm going to guess that Alexander this was not an unusual action for him. I'm going to guess that, you know, being that he murdered her, and hey, sometimes people don't get along. You know, familiarity breeds contempt, as the old saying goes. I think that comes from Shakespeare. And maybe that's what they got in a fight and he just lost his mind, but given what I think I've read about the guy and know about this guy now that I have heard about this story, I don't know how unusual it is that he murdered his co-host. And as I continue to say, statistics will show that in the United States, most violent acts are committed by liberals. They're the ones who are most likely to murder people, most likely to rape people, most likely to commit burglary, car theft, and everything else. It's Republicans and conservatives who are the law-abiding citizens, almost to a fault, really. I feel bad for Heather's family. Hope she rests in peace. I gotta go. EdwardDensel.com is where you can find the show. You can also find it on RedStateTalkRadio.com. You find it on Podomatic and iTunes. And the Twitter address is USA Podcast. My other program, Unfound, mentioned it a little bit today, my missing persons program, doing very, very well, lots of downloads, going to be starting on a true crime book this summer involving all of the cases that I've covered, a nonfiction crime book. Looking forward to that. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.